Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Now comes to the far wing where Ryan Rollins rips the cords on a three-pointer from that left side.
Butts Talk starts now.
Final horn sounds, and it is another tough ending for the Bucks to round out a three-game road trip that saw them go 0-3. That is now five straight losses for a Milwaukee Bucks team.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, here's Justin Garcia.
Well, you heard it. A tough one today in Boston. 79 points. It was 26-26 after the first quarter. So, well, the Bucks scored 53, but 81-53. Final 36 minutes of this game. Offense is going to continue to be tough to come by efficiently when you don't have Giannis, and you just see what that means for everyone, right? I mean, five shots, five field goal attempts in this game today from A.J. Green. He's another guy that you need somebody to help him get those open looks and that gravitational pull that Giannis brings. But overall, it was an ugly offensive game. You heard Doc Rivers afterwards talk about he liked the way their defense played, and you know, some of the efficiency numbers for the Celtics, 107 points isn't all that much to give up in an NBA game today in 2026, but the offense continues to be the issue for this team, and they're now 11 games below 500. You will not hear this from the organization of, well, on to next year, and hopefully we get a really good draft pick. The message remains what we heard from Doc Rivers, a week ago, and heard a little bit more of it today before the game. Like, yeah, we aren't shutting Giannis down for the season. We expect him to come back and play before the season is up. But time may be up by that point. You are now starting to really, really lose ground in the Eastern Conference standings. And again, as we've talked about much, much earlier in the year than any of us anticipated having those conversations. You know, conversations we haven't had for, 13 years, basically. You got to go all the way back to the 2015-16 season. Since the Bucks missed the playoffs. So 10 years, 13 years, what am I thinking here? But it's been that long, right? 16-17, you made the playoffs. You were, a 7 seed? And lost to the Raptors, or were they a 3 seed? Toronto in the first round. But regardless, even in those moments where you below 500 are they going to miss altogether? Like, it was a young core with Giannis, with Jabari Parker, with Chris Middleton. Like, it was a young core that you were saying, it is in our best interest, even if we are roadkill in our first-round series, it is in our best interest to make the playoffs, get playoff experience for our young guys, and plus, you know, who knows? We'll see what happens. The following year, you were definitely a 7 seed the following year in the 17-18 season when you faced the Boston Celtics. And in that season, you know, nobody was saying, should the Bucks miss the playoffs, is it in their best interest? Like, that conversation was never taking place with the heights that we had seen Giannis begin to ascend to. That was a year that you had a coaching change too, and Joe Prunty was your interim coach going into the postseason. You caught what we perceived to be a break with a Boston Celtics team that was going into that series without Kyrie Irving and other injuries, that it felt like this is finally the year the Bucks are going to break through and reach the second round of the playoffs. It goes 7 games, you lose game 7. But there was never at any point in those 2 years the thought of, well, would you be better off not making the playoffs and getting yet another young guy in the mix here? Like, from that point forward, okay, we're good on young guys. You know, not to say you can't always continue to add to it, but we're good here. 10 years ago with 21-year-old Giannis, 8 years ago really in that mix, but early 20s Giannis and Chris Middleton and Jabari Parker, we're good on the young front. Let's start to get some playoff reps. Let's start to experience what these moments are like and see what we have with this group. So that is why this is familiar. This is territory. None of us have been familiar with for quite some time that you're getting reacclimated to. And that's the big difference is, man, you got to go back all the way to that first year after, you know, the timeline of 15 wins to, holy cow, the Bucks hire Jason Kidd and they won 41 games to then missing the playoffs that following year. Like, you got to go all the way back to then, to where you were starting to have the conversations that are probably taking place, that are definitely taking place with Bucks fans now of, you know, I don't like to see the team lose. I don't like to see the team look the way that they have, but this may well be in our best interest here if we continue to see more of this for the remainder of the season. Now, it is a dangerous place to get to. It is a very, very slippery slope because, you know, the whole joke of own the future, win the lottery. The Bucks can't win the lottery unless something changes between now and Thursday. The Bucks cannot win the lottery this year. So the ideal scenario for the Bucks is something that's going to be a very, very small needle to thread here, in that you need the Hawks, best case scenario, the Hawks win the lottery by way of the New Orleans Pelicans getting the number one pick, and you jump all the way up to second. Because as it sits right now in the standings, I don't know how much further we can see the Bucks drop given the separation between teams that are already down there. And look, maybe some of that changes with these 4+ weeks, whatever it is, before we see Giannis make his return. Maybe other teams, maybe young guys, just make it unassailable of, holy cow, these guys are playing really well, and this team, Team X, continues to win games. We can't just shut them down for the tanking rules that are in place. But still, there's still a great deal of separation that I think, even with a very difficult schedule, which I do want to highlight here, what the Bucks have coming up after this week in this homestand, which may be where we start to see where realistically you can start to slot the Bucks in this next month, roughly, of games. But in the meantime, you're kind of stuck in limbo of, boy, it'd be great to move up in the lottery. Not too much, though, because we don't want to give up a great pick to Atlanta, and we get nothing in the short term, or not quite as good, I should say. We can't really juice our chances all that much unless other teams behind us start winning, and they're teams that don't have an incentive to win. So the details behind that, I know all the, you know, the CBA, the what aprons mean what, and these trades, and, well, you can't do this because that's the guaranteed player base salary and all that stuff that goes around there with NBA contracts. The league makes it very confusing for their casual fans and average fans to follow and know, like, why can't I make this trade? The same thing can be said for the lottery when you talk about pick swaps and what deferred picks mean, and also these teams that we said it's going to be tough to catch them because of their incentive. So we'll take a look at that. The schedule in front for the Bucks, it is about to get brutal. You know, as if 79 points scored, a fifth straight loss, dropping to 11 games below 500 wasn't bad enough, it's about to get really rough with the schedule that the Bucks have once they get through this week. So we'll take a look at that, and plenty of opportunity to hear from you as well. 855-616-1620. The Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us. More after this on Bucks Talk.
Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
Final score today in Boston. The Celtics take care of the Bucks. Five straight losses now for this Bucks team. They're 11 games below 500 for the first time since the 16-17 season, I believe it is. It's been a while, right? What we started at the top of the show talking about, Bucks haven't been in this spot, not just in terms of wins and losses, but like projecting what makes the most sense for the rest of the season and how do we tackle these final X amount of games here. It's a spot they haven't been in a decade. All-star reserves were announced today. By the way, how many of you knew all-star reserves were getting announced today? Like, that's the other thing of, these are things you don't really pay attention to when the season's going the way that it has so far for the Bucks. But, you know, it was an annual tradition that this team was always getting more than one. Giannis and Chris, Giannis and Drew, Giannis and Dame. Now it's just Giannis, and Giannis isn't going to play in that game with the latest calf injury. But the Eastern Conference All-Star reserves that were announced today, Donovan Mitchell of the Cavaliers, Jalen Duren of the Pistons, Scottie Barnes of the Raptors, Norm Powell of the Miami Heat, Pascal Siakam of the Pacers, Karl-Anthony Towns of the Knicks, and Jalen Johnson, the Wausau native, Wisconsin native, having an absolute monster breakout season with the Atlanta Hawks. Jalen Johnson earns his first in what figures to be many All-Star nods here so far. A couple notable names that did not get in. Michael Porter Jr. I don't think anybody is going to die on the hill of saying, look, the Brooklyn Nets absolutely need to have an All-Star this season, but Michael Porter Jr.'s numbers certainly warrant it. Josh Giddey as well, when you think about the start the Bulls were off to, and they've been a team that has gone through ebbs and flows all throughout the season, and now they're going through some more of those flows. Josh Giddey's a big piece of that. He didn't get the nod. Bam Adebayo doesn't get the spot. It goes to Norm Powell instead. So those were the notable snubs and the names that made it in the Eastern Conference for the West. LeBron James, that's the big story. It's his 22nd All-Star appearance. He makes it as a reserve here. So I said before, you know, where the Bucks currently are, here's the tricky thing, is like number one, and we've gone over this nightly on this show because there is a lot of confusion, and it's no shot at anyone's intelligence. It's just how confusing the league can make things with pick swaps and what that means and the way that it can be parsed out there in the verbiage you hear tossed around it. It leads to a lot of confusion. So here's what you need to know. The Bucks do have a first-round pick this season. So in that sense, if there was a year where it was just going to be like, man, none of this has gone our way. Every worst-case scenario is starting to come to life for this team. If there was going to be a year in these next few where you could deal with that, this is the year. Because next year you don't have your first-round pick. Your 2027 first-round pick is on paper owed to the New Orleans Pelicans. What you need to know is the Bucks don't have it. It's the final pick that goes out in that Drew Holiday trade. Now, the Pelicans have since traded potentially the rights to it in another deal we'll get to in a moment, but you don't have a first-round pick next year. Nothing at this moment is changing there. In 2028 is when the Damian Lillard trade kicks in. So 28, 29, and 30 are all impacted there, where you got one pick going out in 29 and you got pick swaps going out in 28 and 30. So in other words, if the Bucks finish with a worse record than the Blazers, and again, this is where it gets really confusing, is I believe both of those, but at least the 2028 pick has multiple teams that are in on that pick swap now. You're not going to benefit, right? If you win the lottery, you don't get that pick. You will get a pick, but it's not the number one pick. It's not the number two pick. It's not the number three pick in those scenarios. So that's why you've heard people say, hey, if there was a year that you were going to be bad, this is the year to do it. Well, because not only you've got a pick this summer, and it is impacted by a pick swap, but the other team that is linked to that pick swap, they are worse than you right now. So at worst, you hope and figure you're still going to get a pretty good draft pick. So that pick swap, what it means is this. It's tied to not only the Pelicans' record, but the lottery. So the Bucks and the Pelicans are those two teams that are impacted by the standings. As of this moment, the New Orleans Pelicans have the second worst record in the league. So the top three records, bottom three in that sense, they have an equal chance to win the lottery. Fourth is not that far behind. It's, what, 14% for the bottom three records, and I think it's 12.5% if you're the number four, fourth worst record. So it's essentially a flat chance for the four worst records in the league. Right now, the Pelicans have the second worst record. They are 13-38. The Sacramento Kings are 12-38, and we just saw the Sacramento Kings trade Dennis Schroeder and trade Keon Ellis. They did bring in DeAndre Hunter. But who knows? Maybe Domas Sabonis gets traded between now and Thursday. Maybe Zach LaVine gets traded between now and Thursday. So the chances of Sacramento really hanging on to at least one of those top four spots for best chance to win the lottery are pretty good. The Wizards have the worst record in the East. They're 12-35. The Pacers round out that bottom four. So if the season were to end today, Kings, Pelicans, Wizards, and Pacers would be the four teams that essentially have an even chance to win the lottery. The following teams then are the Brooklyn Nets, the Utah Jazz, the Memphis Grizzlies, and the Bucks at number eight. Now, a couple things to keep in mind when we said it's going to be tough to catch these teams. The Utah Jazz, right now, sixth worst record in the league. The Utah Jazz have a pick that goes out, but it's top eight protected. So in other words, as long as Utah finishes with one of the four worst records in the league, they are guaranteed to keep that. If they finish in the top five or six, they still have a pretty excellent chance at keeping it. The way the lottery works is wherever it is you finish in the standings, the worst you can do is four spots lower, because theoretically four teams could jump into the top four. You seldom see it happen with four teams. You can see multiple. We saw that last year. But if you see all four teams that were supposed to be in the top four fall out, then it's we just got the worst luck in the world. But here's where you have to keep in mind the impact and the tie between the Bucks and the Pelicans. So the Pelicans are basically running the race for the Hawks. New Orleans doesn't keep that pick, but their record and what happens to them in the lottery impacts it. Atlanta is getting a pick either way from either the Bucks or the Pelicans. So why we've said, hey, if the Bucks win the, like, they can't win the lottery and keep the pick. They can win the lottery, but they're not getting it. So if the Bucks do win the lottery, that goes to the Atlanta Hawks. Because of the pick swap with New Orleans, where New Orleans can choose which of these two picks is better, ours or the Bucks. Well, if it's the Bucks, we take the Bucks and you get our pick. They traded those rights to Atlanta last summer. So now it applies to Atlanta, where if the Bucks win the lottery, thank you, we'll take that pick, and here you can get whatever New Orleans had or where they finished. There was a lot of talk over gap years and like, well, why wouldn't the Bucks have just approached this season? Why would you waive and stretch Dame? Why did you sign Miles Turner? There's another interesting thing there with Miles that I haven't heard a lot of people suggest, but I do want to get to that a little bit later. The reason you could not have approached this as a gap year, quote unquote gap year, is not even because of the elephant in the room and the fact that, hey, you know, the best player on your team and the best player in the conference, he can basically tell you I'm becoming a free agent the following year. So you can't say, all right, we're just going to take a step backward. Who knows when we recover from this, but trust us. Trust us. This is best for us in the long haul, even if that is the case. That's the toughest part of the sell. The other reason why the Bucks could not do that is, you know, you can look at the roster and say, well, who are you fooling, right? As a few others used to say, who you crapping here? You can try to sell me on we're going to be a playoff team, we're going to be fighting for the playoffs, but I looked at this Pelicans roster. No, you're not. The fact is, New Orleans approached this season still trying to win, competing to win, because of the trade they made last year at the deadline or at the draft, meaning they don't have a first-round pick. So it does not behoove them to be bad. They're going to have to try to win, and that's what they thought Derek Queen was going to do for them. So knowing that and looking at it, and I believe the Pelicans were somewhere around 10th worst record when we look at win total projections coming in. I mean, they were in all likelihood going to be a lottery team, but probably at the back half of the lottery was the thought. So if you're the Bucks, you can't say, okay, we're tearing it down and this is going to be a gap year, because in that sense, you could be handing over the number one pick and getting back the number 12 pick somewhere along those lines. That's why you couldn't approach this as a gap year. Now, as we saw very early into the season, oh boy, all right, injuries are going to occur. The Pelicans are going to continue to struggle, and it turns out they're going to be bad too. That may have been best case scenario for this team, that, you know, you can view it as a gap year if you are going to be attached at the hip with New Orleans, and that's currently what we're seeing. They're 13-38. You, the Bucks, are 18-29. But I mentioned the Wizards have a top eight protected pick that goes to the Knicks. The Utah Jazz have a top eight protected pick as well. So those are two teams in the Wizards and Jazz who are going to try their hardest to finish in the bottom four. And if not, at worst, we're going to keep this in the bottom eight. Ideally, like bottom six, somewhere around there to increase our chances of keeping that pick. Because in all these pick protections, which is why I do believe we're eventually headed towards removing anything but top four, in all these pick protections, it just makes for an ugly product. It certainly makes it confusing to keep up with, well, wait a minute. If it doesn't convey now, then it becomes 2 seconds and this and that. But it also increases those tanking games that we see. And I think that ultimately that's what the league wants to get away from. Unfortunately for the Bucks, there's a handful of teams behind them in the standings that have those incentives that are saying, look, even if it's developing young guys, like we heard the message from Austin Ainge and the Utah Jazz earlier before the season even began, we're not going to purposely lose games, right? We're not going to rest guys. We're not going to try to tank. I do believe that because at some point you can't keep willingly losing games for the culture standpoint and what that means and what sets in your locker room. But you can discover issues and injuries with guys that are playing efficiently and effectively that all of a sudden are not available for a week or so. So I think we're going to see a lot of that. Ideally for the Bucks, the New Orleans Pelicans win the lottery and you jump up to number two. That would be the best case scenario. But regardless, there is still an excellent chance you're at worst picking in the top eight here if you're the Bucks. Their spot has a 29% chance to move into the top four. Now, again, if that's the case, you need New Orleans to move into the top four as well. That doesn't mean you would keep a top four pick, but you got about a third chance where you're currently standing to get a pick that impactful. And that, more than anything, may be what this team needs most. When you look at the makeup of the roster, the age that is set in, and again, here's the biggest thing. We talked about this group needs to get younger. They need to be more athletic. They got to play different ways. They took steps to address that in the offseason. It hasn't played out like that. I'm not going to sit here and tell you, yeah, but you can see this, this, and this. Like, it has not worked. Doesn't mean it won't work. We haven't seen it so far this season. But they did take steps to get younger. Now, even with those steps they've taken, they are still the fifth oldest roster in the league. And that, more than anything, I think just shows you how far behind the eight ball they had been in recent years, with a nucleus and a group that had played together and played at the highest level starting to get older and starting to put a lot of miles on those tires there. You got to continue to take a step in that direction of, okay, let's continue to get younger. Let's continue to play different ways. But more importantly, let's get young, impactful talent. And the way to do that is something the Bucks have not been able to do in over 10 years. And that is picking not only in the lottery, but very high in the lottery, and especially in a draft like this that is loaded with impactful players at the top. I mean, you can debate whether or not this is a three-player draft in terms of blue chip. This guy's a guaranteed stud, but there's a lot of depth in this draft. Where the way it was put to me is, you got three guys at the top that you feel like these guys are going to be stars. After that, the lottery is filled with guys that you feel he's going to be a starter. Maybe he could be an all-star. And it goes on and on and on, through even early into outside of the lottery. That's how deep this draft potentially is, and that's what the Bucks have been searching for more than anything. 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us today on Bucks Talk. It is now, once we get through this day, I should say, once we get into tomorrow, it is officially the week of the trade deadline. We've seen two moves take place here in less than 24 hours, and there's one I cannot wrap my head around the way people are talking about it, and I can assure you, not every single move is related to Giannis. I'll tell you what I mean after this on Bucks Talk.
Round Ball Repartee returns. This is Bucks Talk.
All right, 107-79, the final today, and it is in Boston. Celtics beat the Bucks again, and the 79 points, the fewest the Bucks have scored in a regular season game. I haven't checked playoffs. I would assume this applies as well, because the only one that really stands out is that final game against the Bulls in the 14-15 season, I believe, where they lost by, what, was it 60? I haven't checked whether or not the playoffs apply here as well, but regardless, fewest points the Bucks have scored in a regular season game since January of 2018 against the Miami Heat. So Thursday's the trade deadline. It is, I believe, 2 o'clock Central Time, Thursday afternoon. I frankly don't know what to expect, not only for the Bucks, for anyone. I am inclined to believe it's going to be relatively quiet, and any moves that we do see made are going to be like what we've seen in the last 24 hours, specifically the one that was made today, this morning. I think you're going to see more small-scale moves where teams are getting second-round picks, where teams are trying to shed some cap space and some tax room. Couple interesting developments there in the last day as well, but we talked last week on this show about, hey, there's a handful of teams that I would keep an eye on as a Bucks fan and say, well, is there something that we could take and extract from this team? Because the Bucks are in a spot where, you know, they became a cap team over the summer, a cap space team last summer. That allowed them to sign Miles Turner with the waving and stretching of Damian Lillard. They are not a second apron team. They're not even a first apron team. So the point of it is they've got room to take back salary. They can take 150% more than they're sending out. So that was the thing that I thought, okay, let's keep an eye on this. Of, is there a player you feel like, you know what? Either this is a guy that we think there's some untapped potential in, like what we've seen from Ryan Rollins, to a lesser extent just in terms of he wasn't on another team, but AJ Green is another one to look at it and say, I see something there. There's this one skill set this player has. We feel like we can develop something here. We just said we need to be in the business of accumulating young, cheap talent. Is there a guy that, you know, we can see? Kind of similar to a move that was made earlier today, that you could either pry from a team that just needs to shed money and get under the luxury tax or get one of the under one of those aprons. Is there a contract you can absorb and say, look, we'll send out a minimum contract. We'll take back $6 or $7 million. Little less than that with 150% rule, but we'll take back more money because we can to help you get under the tax, but it's going to cost you some second round picks so we can start to rebuild that coffer of ours as well. I think if anything, that's what we'll see from the Bucks, and I think that's a majority of what you're going to see around the league. There were two trades within the last 24 hours, and I mentioned one of them is really what I feel like this is what I'd target if I were the Bucks. This type of move. The other one is what I think we're largely going to see. So the one that I would target and kind of what we walk through of, these are the things I'd be looking to do in the Bucks spot and frankly in a lot of team spots. The Hawks traded Vit Krejci. And first and foremost, the discourse that's surrounding this trade right now is something I cannot wrap my head around, of people that are blown away and reacting almost as if the Atlanta Hawks just traded Luka Doncic again. Vit Krejci is a nice young player. He's not a starter. He's not a starter-level player. He fouls a lot. He's not a good rebounder for his size. His shooting efficiency has dropped off as the season has gone on. And he's in a numbers crunch in Atlanta right now, where you look at the roster of Luke Kennard is in front of him. They brought in Corey Kispert at the trade deadline. They brought in C.J. McCollum, too, who may just be 1 year that C.J. McCollum's there, but nonetheless, a player that's in front of Vit Krejci. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, their big free agent signing in the offseason. Like Zachary Risache and Dyson Daniels. They have guys at that position that are in front of him. This was a way to turn, hey, a nice player, right? Like, none of us are going to dispute it. He's certainly a rotational player who's averaging 9 points a game this season, shooting 40%+ from three, too. He was in the top 20, albeit at two attempts per game. But he's a nice player we just got guys that play this position as well, and we can turn this into 2 second-round picks. So they traded him to Portland for Duop Reith, who you may recall had a big game against the Bucks a couple of years ago, for Duop Reith and 2 second-round picks. Duop Reith plays a position the Hawks needed. He's another big man. They could also just outright cut him and open up a roster spot to say, okay, more flexibility. We can bring back multiple players in a deal. And we also got 2 second-round picks. Now, the Hawks are not doing this trade to set up a Giannis trade down the road. There are no second-round picks. I feel pretty confident in saying if and when the Bucks ever do decide it's time, mutually, I should say, is how we would get there. If there is a mutual decision, it is time to move on and get out of the Giannis business. I can all but guarantee you there will not be any second-round picks that are involved in that trade. This wasn't about Giannis. This had nothing to do with Giannis. This was simply a numbers crunch. We can turn this into second-round picks. Those second-round picks we could use, I guess if you want to go with turning a paperclip into a house, yeah, maybe we could use those second-round picks along with something else to turn it into another guy and turn that into something that we eventually loop back to a larger trade. But this, to me, was about asset allocation for the Atlanta Hawks. That's the type of move that we just kind of talked about. Find teams that are up against the luxury tax. Find teams that are up against an apron. See what you can get from them. And it may cost you something. It may cost you a nice player that you have, too. But what can we get that helps us even more so than this current player down the road? That's what Atlanta did today. The other trade, which was yesterday afternoon, a three-team trade, the main elements to this were the Kings and the Cavs. And the Cleveland Cavaliers are one of those teams we talked about when we said, what can you take from other teams? Because Cleveland had the largest payroll of any team in the league. I don't know where it currently rates after this trade. We'll take a look during the break. But Cleveland had the largest salary contracts, had the largest cap figure of any team in the league, well into the second apron. So what can you do to help them and say, look, we know, we experienced it last year. We know you got to get under that second apron. So we'll help you get there, but it's going to cost you some things. And Cleveland took a big step towards getting out of the second apron. They can get there now. They would basically have to move Lonzo Ball, who I think is fair to say has been a disappointment so far in Cleveland. Their Alonzo Ball trade away $10 million away from getting under the second apron right now with this trade that they pulled off. They turned DeAndre Hunter, who you thought would be the piece that put you over the top last year, and it just never got there for the Cavs, and now this year they're playing better of late. This year, Cleveland's been a disappointment. And it's one thing to be disappointed and say, well, we got plenty of time to sort this out, and we're still young. We're just starting these contracts. That's not where Cleveland was. Extensions have kicked in. They brought in bigger contracts. DeAndre Hunter was one of those. The reality in this league now is once you get there, once you say, okay, start the clock, 3 years. 3 years is your window. With the way all of these extensions kick in and contract timelines, once you choose to start the clock, starting that season, you got 3 years. That year and two more before you got to start to tear it down and say, okay, how do we pivot from this to this? How do we sell off a piece that we feel pretty good about to get something that's okay, but financially it puts us in a better spot? And that's where Cleveland is now. Of, all right, we started this really with the Donovan Mitchell trade and everything has changed with this new CBA, but Darius Garland has gotten paid since. Evan Mobley's extension kicked in. Quietly under the radar, nobody is mentioning, for as much talk goes into Giannis and, hey, he can become a free agent. Well, same can be said for Donovan Mitchell, and I get it. The Cavs are in a much better spot in terms of the standings than the Bucks currently are, but given their cap situation, given the fact that it's a disappointing start to the season for this team, beyond start, we're halfway through it, nobody's mentioning, hey, Donovan Mitchell can also become a free agent after next year. That's why Cleveland made this trade. So they turned DeAndre Hunter into two pieces, Dennis Schroeder and Keon Ellis. Now, Keon Ellis was a guy Bucks fans were even clamoring for, too, and said, hey, wouldn't he be nice here? Sure, yes. He would certainly help you defensively. Small volume, right? Not a whole lot of attempts, but hits threes at a pretty nice rate, the Bucks' problem isn't 6'4 two guards, right? Even though Keon Ellis would be the best individual defensive guard you have on the team, that's not their issue. Small forwards are like DeAndre Hunter is the guy. Ideally, that type of player is what the Bucks have been missing. But Cleveland, knowing Jalen Tyson has started to play better, we're really far into that second apron. Like, we just have to start to not necessarily tear this apart, but let's sell some of these pieces. And that's what they did. So I'm very interested to see what else does Cleveland do. Because at this point, when you get that close, and it was kind of the notion with teams that we mentioned of, you know, Philadelphia, Atlanta, those types of teams. Washington's another one to look at. Toronto especially. Denver. Teams that are close, just barely into the tax, they're going to get under the tax, right? If it's a couple $100,000 that we're talking about, they're going to trade a guy to make sure they don't have to pay that tax. And not just about paying the tax, but starting that clock on becoming a repeater team when extensions start to kick in. So keeping an eye on those teams. And now for Cleveland to get to where they currently are, the second apron level is $207 million. I believe they're at around $218 million. So they could make one more trade and say, what else can we sell off to get under that second apron? What other teams are going to do something similar? Now, there's one team that's not. That was another one of those, hey, keep an eye on this team. If you're the Bucks, what could you say? Hey, we'll take this back for you in exchange for some picks. You can cross one of those teams off the list now, given another thing that popped up yesterday. So we'll take a look at that. And this schedule in front of the Bucks really past this week. Once you go into the final week of the first half and post All-Star break is where things get really interesting. We'll take a look at that coming up after this on Bucks Talk.
This is Bucks Talk.
79 points scored by the Bucks, the lowest scoring output in a Bucks game by the Bucks since 2018. January of 2018 against the Miami Heat. 107-79, 26 apiece after the first quarter. And then just boat raced in the final 36 minutes, 81-53. Boston runs away with it in this 28-point victory at TD Garden. So we just mentioned the likely things to watch for at the deadline. I don't think there's going to be a deadline full of huge blockbuster deals, because I think it usually takes a year or two for teams to kind of get a sense for how to navigate CBAs. We're there at this point, you know, and looking at how teams have figured out, boy, we really can't build teams this way. Like, the way to do it in this iteration of the league, like, the way to do it is what Oklahoma City did, what Indiana did too. Like, we got to have a surplus of young two-way guys and pick our spots in what we're acquiring. They did it two separate ways. Oklahoma City did it through the draft. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, bringing in a guy that becomes an MVP candidate, MVP last year, and maybe the MVP once again this season. That certainly helps you out as well, but largely through the draft. When you look at all the picks that Sam Presti acquired and picks that they continue to have, by the way, we talked about the Bucks, and, you know, you can't win the lottery. You can, but you want to keep it. Oh, by the way, the Clippers are in the same spot. If the Clippers fall into the lottery and win, that pick goes to the Oklahoma City Thunder. So the rich would get richer here. But the Thunder did it through all those draft picks and drafting and developing guys. It's one thing to have picks. It's entirely separate to make the right picks and develop those players. That is what Oklahoma City has done well. That is what Miami has done well. That's what Toronto has done well. That's what the Bucks, frankly, have struggled to do. And that's another spot. That's another reason why you're in this spot. Indiana did it differently. Indiana had those two-way guys. They drafted a lot of them and developed them. But they made moves where you're not trading for max contracts and those level players. You're trading for guys that fit the rest of your group and saying, Tyrese Halliburton's our star. He's the guy that's going to make everyone better. So we'll bring in a Robin, right? We'll bring in those types of moves. And you're seeing more and more of it. The Knicks, you can point to them. They did it through trading. I don't think you're going to see the way that team is built. I don't think that's going to carry through with many, if any, teams going forward. But it does help when guys take team-friendly extensions like Jalen Brunson. I just think we're at a place where more and more teams in front offices have looked around and said, you know, the way to do it is what we talked about a lot of times in the NFL and football. And if you can have a quarterback on his rookie contract, like, that is how you jumpstart a good and impactful quarterback. That's how you jumpstart winning. If we can have guys that are impactful players, rookie level contracts, not even on that first max extension, the fun max, as Brian Windhorst always refers to it. If we can have those guys that are competing, and you're seeing it, by the way, for all the talk of, but rookies, you know, who cares? Rookies aren't going to push the needle. They're starting to do it now. That's the new way. And the way to do that is to accumulate draft picks. So when you have a league that is starting to fall into that realization, what do you give up draft picks for, right? I mean, a guy that we have, that's an entirely different conversation. But some of the picks that we've seen, asset allocation and trades we've seen made before, like, not to bring up his name, especially in light of what's developed in the last couple of days and weeks, but trading 5 second-round picks for Jay Crowder, like, those are the types of moves I just don't think you're going to see teams rushing to do anymore. That team, by the way, that I said, they're out of the mix. As a team, you would look at as the Bucks and say, can we get anything from them? Because they would love to get under the tax. Philadelphia 76ers. And the reason they're not in that mix anymore, you know, you're Philly. Look, yes, it's going to hurt you in the short term, especially as you're trying to stay out of the play-in tournament, but you also get the sense Philly's playing with house money this season. But the Paul George 25-game suspension is going to cost him, I believe it was $11 million in salary this season. That's enough to take Philadelphia under the tax. So none of those moves of, I wonder, could you get this guy from Philly and say, okay, give us that contract or just give us this. We'll save you from paying the luxury tax and we're getting a player we like or we're getting draft picks. Not going to be the case anymore. So you can cross that team off the list. I mentioned this schedule that's in front of the Bucks. It's not this week. I mean, this week, look, you're 18 and 29. There's going to be challenges no matter who it is you line up against. But this week it's the Bulls, the Pelicans, the Pacers. After that, for about a month, things pick up big time. So we'll preview the schedule ahead of the Bucks and wrap things up after this on Bucks Talk.
Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
All right, the Bucks fall in Boston to the Celtics. They're 18 and 29 now on the season, and we talked about the schedule that's in front of this group. So if we look at the remaining schedule for all teams, the deceiving part of it is the Bucks currently are number 20 in opponent win percentage the rest of the way. So in other words, the, 10th easiest schedule, 5th easiest remaining schedule in the Eastern Conference, but the bulk of that is coming very, very soon here. So again, after this homestand, this upcoming week, Tuesday at home against the Bulls, Wednesday home against the Pelicans, Friday home against the Pacers. You get the weekend off, and then you go to Orlando for 2 games, Monday and Wednesday in Orlando against the Magic, Thursday in Oklahoma City against the Thunder. Then you go into the All-Star break. Now, coming out of the break, you get the New Orleans Pelicans in what figures to be a very interesting game for the obvious reason. But then after that, Raptors at home, Heat at home, Cavs at home, Knicks at home. 4-game homestand, 4 Eastern Conference playoff teams. Then you're in Chicago. Then you come back home for another 5-game homestand, and that is Celtics, Hawks, Utah Jazz, Magic, and the Phoenix Suns. Then you go on the road for 2 more, Miami and Atlanta. Then you come home for the Pacers. And again, another game where it's going to be both teams saying, what are we trying to do here? Before the Cavs, and then another West Coast trip, Utah, Phoenix, Clippers, Portland Trail Blazers, before coming home for the Spurs, Clippers, Mavs, on the road in Houston, and then Boston at home. So it is brutal now, basically through late March. So we'll see where the Bucks stand. But again, 20th in strength of schedule. So as bad as that is, other teams have it worse. Tuesday night, Bucks return home for the start of a three-game homestand. It's the Bucks and the Bulls, a border battle from Fiserv Forum. 7 o'clock tip, 6:30 is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We'll talk with you Tuesday night.